Okay, thank you for everyone that logged on. We have a good turnout today, which is good because this is a really important training. I know it's some basic stuff, but you will be asked these questions that I just outlined in the email until the end and dawn of time, until you're in this business. So it's really, really important that you guys do know the answers. Our training today is going to be for borrow frequently asked questions, and let's just go through them right now. One of the biggest questions you will ever be asked is, you know, what does your company do? Everyone knows that we have the company information email. Always right off the bat, please tell people we're a brokerage company. We're not a direct lender. The service we provide is properly placing your loan with the correct lender, getting you the best rates and terms we can out there, and then quarterbacking the whole entire deal to a close. And that's something so important. We're a full-service brokerage company. For those of you that I've closed deals with, you know how much we go above and beyond to close deals, not just coordinating with title, property insurance, lawyers, realtors, but there's times where, like, I'll have to call the seller and beg them for an extension, get them a pre-approval, and I can't tell you how many times I have the seller calling me at all times of night, leaving me nasty messages like, when are you guys going to close? Just, you know, so it's a lot because we really quarterback the whole entire deal to a close. When we see something is going wrong, and Ryan, me and you are working on a deal right now with your repeat borrower, Sharon, it's not working out with the current lender that it's with. You know, when I see something going wrong, we have to switch the file to someone we know that can get it done. It's just really important to have a good broker in your transaction because they're really there to protect you and to make sure the deal gets done. So that's what we do. Please don't ever represent us as a direct lender because first of all, we're not. Second of all, you need to be proud to be a broker and do what we do. There's a lot of bad brokers in this industry, like any profession, and there's a lot of good brokers as well. But you will hear stories from borrowers, you know, oh, my God, I had this bad experience with a broker. Yeah, you know, it's a pretty fairly easy business to get into and doesn't require really any licensing. Which is great. It's a great opportunity because it's a great business to get into to make money. But also that means anyone can get into it and pretend like they know what they're doing when they're not. And you're handling someone's financial transaction where they could lose thousands, if not more, if the deal does not go through properly. So second question, which I kind of already explained. People are going to ask you, why should I use a broker and not go to a direct lender? It's really their prerogative. You know, if you want to go to a direct lender and you have relationships with direct lenders and those relationships are working out, you're right. You probably don't need a broker. If there's something you're missing or lacking with your current lenders that you know, you're not getting, let us know. We'll quickly tell you if we can solve that problem for you or not. That's what we do as brokers. We solve people's problems. If they don't have a problem, we don't really have a deal. You know, if your bank can do the loan, great, go to your bank. You don't need a broker. The last thing we want to do is work on a file for months and months and months, especially a bank loan, for you to turn around and say, oh, my bank's going to do it, because we don't get paid to the close anyway. So someone has to clearly have an issue that we can solve and clearly need a broker in that transaction in order for us to assist. But just to kind of reiterate, you know, if you're working with a good brokerage company, they're going to solve your problems. That's why you use a broker. They're going to quarterback your deal to a close and protect you and let you know if something weird is going on. You know, I've dealt with title people, insurance people on so many transactions, and if, you know, one of those third parties starts kind of acting weird or things are not panning out the way they should, you know, I've called the borrower and said, look, here's what's going on. We need to switch title companies, or we need to switch the insurance company, or the insurance company told me last minute they can't put the insurance policy in a corporate entity. Why didn't they tell us that from the get-go when I told them it had to be in a corporate entity? So there's a lot of things. Also, just to add to that, there's a million lenders out there. We've done calls with probably over 60. I'm not sure how many are in the portal, but we've done a lot of lender calls, and we have just barely scratched the surface. You know, unless you are in this business full-time, you know, as a borrower, you know, how do you know who's real, who's not? I know a lot of our lenders advertise online these days, especially rehab lenders, but if you haven't closed with them, you don't even know the issues that you may face in their underwriting that are not going to come out till underwriting. You know, if you've never closed with any of these lenders, you don't even know what you're up against. You know, there's certain things we can see in a file. I can see right off the bat, and I've mentioned that to a lot of you on files, where this is not going to work with Velocity or Apex or Lending One or Lending Home or whoever it is. And again, that's the issues that we solve. So that's why they would use us. The most question you will always be asked, which I probably repeat like 10 times a day to people, what is your interest rate? Don't ask Chris this question because they'll just always tell you 1% because he's so tired of hearing it that his answer is just totally absurd, 1%. The interest rate, first of all, you have to explain to people we're not the direct lender. It's not our interest rate. It's the lender's interest rate, but it depends on what type of deal you have. You know, if you're looking for a bank loan and your loan amount's going to be over $1 million, which is where we, you know, play in the bank space, hey, look at our product sheet. Please look at our bank rates and terms. You know, the product sheet starts off with bank rates and terms. You know, if for some reason you are not qualifying for a bank loan because, you know, it's a lack of tax returns, documented income, you want cash out, maybe you have a tax lien or IRS issue, and that's a no-no with the bank, you need to get cash out to solve that issue at closing, please look at our bank alternate section. There's our rates and terms for those types of loans. Again, rehab starts on page 13. There's rates and terms for those type of loans. And ground construction, there's rates and terms for those. I think that starts on page, well, it's down. You guys will see what page it starts on. It starts on page 19. So that's why I took all this effort, just so everyone knows, to create the product sheet, is because it's so detailed about all the program details. It's everything is there about the program. So when someone asks you, you know, what's your interest rate, you need to ask them what type of loan are you looking to do. You know, if you need help, you know, if they're not giving you a direct response that's very clear and you need some help, you know, email it to processing. They'll tell you exactly what type of loan they need. And then you just direct them to that place on the product sheet. You know, we want you guys to talk to as many borrowers as you possibly can. I know last week we got a lot of leads in, and a lot of you took a lot of leads. Thank you so much for doing that, because management couldn't possibly talk to all these people ourselves. But also, you know, when people do ask what your interest rate is, you know, find out what deal they have and direct them to that point when the product sheet. We typically always charge 2 points, just so everyone is aware, because we deal with a lot of small balance loans. But it does depend on the type of file, and we'll get into that a little later. But let's make sure our rates and terms are realistic for what they're expecting, because if someone's looking to do a rehab loan and they're looking for like a 6 or 7% and no points, that's not going to happen. Nobody does that, you know, so we just need to make sure that they're on the same page as realistic expectations, and you're taking your time to get their short form from someone that has realistic expectations. Next question, how much money do I need for the deal, and then how quick can you close? So, again, the product sheet does go over LTVs, you know, stuff associated LTVs with all different types of deals, and all different types of deals have different associated LTVs. A good general rule of thumb, though, for commercial lending in terms of permanent financing, but it's also still a good rule for, like, rehab and ground construction loans. There's always the 730 golden rule in this business. When I broke into this business, this was probably the first rule that Chris taught me. He always said to me, we only did permanent financing then, but he said, borrower always needs 30% down plus closing costs. If they didn't have 30% down plus closing costs, I didn't even mess around with them. I learned that the hard way several times, but, you know, on a commercial property, you know, if you're buying, you know, a warehouse, a strip center, you know, that's really just going to come at a 70% LTV. So you really need 30% down plus closing costs. Your closing costs in a real estate transaction, whether it's a pure commercial property or a 1-to-4 unit investment property, are always the same. They're always going to be a broker fee if you're working with a broker. Lender is going to have a fee for you as well, title insurance and property insurance. Depending on the property, you may need an environmental. Most of the deals we do here don't, but that's it. You know, obviously those fees are based on points and based on deal size, but those are always your closing costs. You know, broker fee, lender fee, title insurance, property insurance, and obviously you need the down money in the transaction. If you just go through the product sheet, you can really kind of see the LTVs associated with each deal, but permanent financing, you really need 70% down. If it's multifamily or mixed use, 75%. On loan amounts over $1 million for multifamily properties, our lenders do go up to 80%, but that is the highest LTV I've ever seen out there on a permanent financing multifamily loan. temporary financing, you know, for rehab loans, 1 to 4 units, general rule of thumb is 20% of the purchase price plus closing costs, plus they need to be liquid to start those renovations, plus they also want to have reserves on hand. And I know a lot of you probably see me break down closing costs to people, and it's very time-consuming to break down closing costs to people. You know, and again, we're not charging upfront retainer or anything for that service, so, you know, it takes time for me to, you know, do some adding, subtracting, multiplication, which is fine. We'll certainly always do that for our borrowers, but it does take a little bit of time to do that. When you're doing that for dozens of people every day, you know, and maybe a third of them move forward, you know, again, just keep in mind it can be very time consuming. Commercial rehabs, you know, we just did a call with a lender last week that does commercial renovation deals, but typically, you know, on their product sheet, I think they're only funding like 60% of the purchase price. You know, I've seen commercial renovation lenders go up to 65% of the purchase price, but then the borrower needs to come with 30 or 35% down plus closing costs. And sometimes those commercial renovation lenders won't fund the renovations the borrower does. It just depends on the lender. Commercial renovation deals are so hard. They're very difficult, and a lot of borrowers just don't have the money to get them done or the commercial renovation experience. If you guys are going to stick to any renovation deals, just stick to the 1 to 4 unit fix and flips. So much easier to get done. We do a ton of them. Ground construction deals, really case by case as well in terms of down money needed for the deal. But basically all of our ground up construction lenders for like 1 to 4 units want to see the borrower have a 25% equity requirement into the deal. For some of them, the value of the land, if they own the land free and clear, can count towards that 25% equity requirement. Some of them don't count that. But look for those on our product sheet. In terms of ground-up construction for pure commercial properties, those LTVs are really all over the place. All I can tell is you have to have a ton of money to get those deals done. And what I want to try to do this week is we actually have a PowerPoint that goes over all different types of deals. Obviously, our product sheet does as well, but the PowerPoint is a little bit more in-depth and actually explains things. I know I sent it out a long time ago, but I really want to edit it and make it look prettier. I'm going to try to get that out to everyone, if not by the end of this week, by early next week. Another question you will also be asked is how quick can you close? That really depends on how quick they can get us their documents. We can place a file in less than 24 hours from their short form if they can give us the correct information and the deal makes sense. But then from there, once it's placed, I need the documents I need for that particular lender. And typically, all permanent financing, like all banks really want the same docs. Bank alt really want the same docs. Rehab lenders want the same. Ground up construction want the same. It's really those four categories. Transactional wholesale lenders, they want the same thing too. So it's really how quickly can they get us their docs. And they also have to keep in mind, there's a lot of third parties involved in a commercial real estate loan. There's an appraiser. They have to do their job, and we have no control over them. They're a third party. There's a title agent. They have to do their job. We have no control over them. There's an insurance agent. Same thing. If there's a lawyer involved in the transaction, if there's a realtor, everyone has their part to play. And we will quarterback that with all of them and nudge all of them when it's their turn to get us what we need. But, you know, it really depends on the transaction. Most rehab deals, 1 to 4 units, close in 2 to 3 weeks. Permanent financing really takes 30 to 45 weeks. That's just the pace where those lenders that's just the pace that those lenders go, you know, and it really does depend on the lender and it depends on the property type. Commercial deals, so 5+ units or anything else that's a pure commercial property, take longer to close because those appraisals take longer to get back. Pretty standard. You know, I would say most commercial appraisals, you know, can take a good 3 weeks to get back and sometimes even a little longer than that depending on how large the property is. So, you know, they really should anticipate 45 days close for a commercial deal if it's a permanent financing loan. But, yeah, you know, that's really how it is. Permanent financing really takes a good 30 to 45 days, although it is contingent on the property type. And hard money loans, you know, those 1 to 4 unit fix and flips really are 2 to 3 weeks. But, again, contingent on everyone coming together and we'll do everything to quarterback and also the borrower getting us the documents they need. The borrower always holds up their own transaction on every single deal. Every single deal, I'm constantly recapping with them, calling them for docs, I know so many of you see that. So turn it around on them. When someone asks you, how quickly can you close? This is what I do to people. I ask them, how quickly are you going to get me the documents I need? You know, because that's really, the quicker you can get in those documents, the quicker you can get it through processing, underwriting approved, lender's ready to go. But if they're like sending you things and taking forever to get their documents in, you know, piecemealing things one by one, it shows the lender that they're not really serious about getting this deal done, and they're going to focus on deals, you know, where the borrower is getting in the things that they need very quickly, and those are going to be the first ones to close. So, okay, we went through different deals, associated down money. Also, just please always remember, guys, you can always go to the product sheet as well if someone's asking you. The LTVs, everything is on there. And I'll get that PowerPoint out the best I can by the end of this week, if not early next week. Can I borrow down money from a friend? That's the question you'll get asked a lot, because once you start talking about LTVs and closing costs with somebody, you know, they may say to you, well, hey, I don't have that down money, you know? And you're going to say, okay, well, you know, you need that down money in order to do a deal. You know, I know there's a lot of lenders we have done calls with that offer 100% financing, but remember, that's only on 1-to-4-unit rehab deals. It's only for that particular type of loan. It's not for permanent financing. It's not for ground-up construction. It's not a bank alternate loan where they, you know, are looking for permanent financing but just missing the banking guidelines. You know, just be aware, though, that's only when we talk to lenders on calls. I thank them so much for taking the time to do that with us, but they're always going to sell the highest LTVs to us because that's what they do to bring in applications. That's fine. Just remember, not every borrower is 100% automatically going to get that. If the profit of their deal is just not there, if they don't have the experience, if they have bad FICO, those are all things you should look out for. Doesn't mean they're going to get 100% financing. They can go up to it, but it's probably going to be for someone that has 700 plus FICO, has done 6 flicks and flip deals in the past 24 months, has a deal that's offering extreme profit. They're only going to do that where it makes sense to them to put themselves in that financial situation. So when people used to ask me before, can I borrow the down money from a friend or a partner, I used to always say no, just so everyone knows. Because most of our lenders do want to source in season funds. They'll ask for 3 months of bank statements. Even Velocity on a purchase will at least ask for 1 month of bank statements. I'm not saying it's impossible. Just if you're going to borrow money from a friend to do a deal, again, for me, from my experience working with lenders, it's still a less enticing deal for them because it's not that person's skin in the game. It's not that person's money. We've worked with lenders. You know, typically, they're hard money lenders for, again, the 1-to-4-unit fix and flips that say that's okay, but they're still going to want to source and season those funds. I'm still going to need bank statements from that partner or friend or whoever they are, family member, showing where that money's coming from because they want to make sure it's legitimate money. And then also, kind of when someone asks you that, I always say to them, you know, why does that partner or friend or whoever they are that has the money, you know, are they going to be joining the LLC with you or entity with you and becoming a partner? And if they say no, I always ask why. Why would someone just give you $30,000 or $40,000, the money that you need for the deal, and not be on the loan or on the title of the property to secure, you know, to secure their position in the deal? You then have no rights. If you're not on the title of the property or if you're not on the loan, you have no rights to the property. How do you know you're going to get that $30,000 or $40,000 you gave back? So that's always kind of a red flag to me, too. I mean, some people do have explanations, like maybe the down money is coming from someone who unfortunately does have bad credit, was a past partner of theirs, and went through a bad credit lull. Now they can't be on the loan. They're close like that, so they know they're not going to get nixed out of the deal. But there's a lot of times where those explanations come back where it just doesn't make sense. I would never give someone that amount of money to go do a real estate deal where I had no rights to the property. But everyone does business different. So just be cautious of that question. Can I borrow the down money from a friend, family member, past business partner, current business partner? Yeah, you can, depending on the deal. Typically for only 1-to-4-unit fix and flip deals, though, do lenders allow that? We still need to, you know, season those funds. So we're still going to need bank statements from them. and you're going to have to put that money into an entity you own and show, you know, where it came from. That's really how I would answer that question. Next question, we kind of already went over this. What will my closing costs be? Yeah, we really already went over that. It's always, if it's a purchase, you need down money on the purchase. Again, it's always going to be broker fee, lender fee, title insurance, property insurance if you are working with a broker. Of course, if you're not working with a brokerage company or a broker, then you wouldn't have a broker fee. And those are really calculated based on closing costs are really based or typically always based on the loan amount. So that's really how they're calculated. Next question, do you offer 100% financing? So I know we kind of already went over this, but just to hit it on the head, I would say yes, some of our lenders do for rehab, fix and flip financing for 1 to 4 unit investment properties, but it is contingent on the borrower's experience, their FICO scores, and the profit, you know, the deal can potentially make, or the merits of the deal itself, if you want to word it like that. I see a lot of rehab submissions sometimes from borrowers or some of you where, you know, they're buying the property for like $100, you know, they're putting, you know, so they're buying the property for $100,000. They're putting like $30,000 into it. So they're all in for $130,000, but then they're only going to sell it for like $145,000. That's the ARV and what's going to be sold for. That doesn't make sense. You know, your only potential to profit there is $15,000. They're not taking into consideration the closing costs they're going to have on the initial close. Again, broker fee, lender fee, title insurance, property insurance, which is going to probably be at least a good $10,000. And then what about the sale? You know, realtors charge 6% on the sale. So it's if you're taking a rehab submission from somebody and you can see like the profit margin there is really close by just doing some simple adding. You know, all I did was the purchase price is 100, you know, the rehab's $30,000, so that equals 130. You know, I would say if their profits aren't at least 160, it doesn't seem worth it to me after you pay for all these fees. But so just kind of on a side tangent there, just be aware of that when you're taking a rehab submission. Also, another niche for 100% financing, we do work with lenders that offer 100% transactional funding. And basically all that means is it's basically like a wholesale transaction. So there's three parties in the deal. There's party A, party B, party C. The wholesaler is party B. And basically they're just getting a purchase and sales contract between party A and then them. And then they're wholesaling the property, so they'll have another purchase and sales contract between party B and party C. And this is there's a lot of wholesalers in my area, in the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area. This is a big way people get involved in real estate that actually don't have money to get in real estate initially. They start making money wholesaling properties, and then as they, you know, make more and more money, they can actually go and buy them and then be their own properties. So the thing about transactional funding, and we did a lender call a while ago with Straight Line Funding. They're one lender we work with that offers it. It is 100% financing based on the first initial purchase price, but again, the only way the lender offers that is if there's going to be a double close in one day. So our wholesaler party B is literally only borrowing money for like 20 minutes, however long it takes title to do from A to B to B to C. We don't do a lot of these deals, and really because if you are a good wholesaler, you've set up your purchase and sales contract to the point where you're able to assign it anyways, so you don't need to borrow funds for that. Some people can't for whatever reason. But really, you know, that's how transactional funding works. You're only getting 100% of the initial purchase price that the wholesaler was supposed to pay for the purchase price because you're going to sell it to the end buyer the same day. And the lender is going to recoup all of their money plus your closing costs before you touch a dime. That's how this works, just so everyone is aware. It's also contingent on party C having an approved mortgage if they have to get a mortgage. If they are buying a cash, we will have to get bank statements from them proving they can buy a cash and verify that with the title company. If they're getting a mortgage for party C is getting a mortgage, the wholesale lender will call that mortgage company and verify that with them, that it's an accurate mortgage. I can't tell you how many times people have tried to play tricks on us where, you know, they're just trying to get 100% financing and they're wholesaling it to party C, but party C is their uncle and we can't get any document. Party C has a fake mortgage approval which is pretty clear sometimes by looking at the doc, but they just think for some reason like we're not going to call the mortgage company and verify that. So yeah, it's contingent on a lot of things. Transactional funding lenders we work with typically charge 2 points, and we charge 2 points. So they're looking at 4 points. Those points can be taken out of the end sale, so the wholesaler would just walk with less, but you do have to break down closing costs to them for a transactional funding deal. That would be all their closing costs. Next question, how many points are you charging me? It's dependent on deal to deal. We typically always charge 2 points, but points are determined by how many options the borrower has in the marketplace and really how quickly they need us to move. You know, if someone, you know, calls us up and you know, needs us to move very, very quickly on a loan, you know, points may change. Points are also determined by how large the loan amount is. I always strive to make at least 10 grand a deal. That definitely doesn't happen in any way, shape, or form. If we have a $1 million loan, I would only ask the borrower for 1 point, again, depending on how quickly they need us to close, because, you know, the lender's going to charge points too, and I'm not trying to, you know, overkill them with points. That's not what we're trying to do, but we do obviously want to be compensated for our services, and we're not paid until closing, so we do a lot of working, and again, don't get paid for some time until a deal closes. But points are really determined deal by deal. You know, on a bank loan, you can really only charge 1 point, maybe two, depends on the bank, and depends on the borrower, what they're going to agree to. A bank alternate loan, we can actually charge up to 5 points on those loans. So if someone has a permanent, they can qualify for permanent financing. They don't yet have to go hard money, but say they have like a tax lien or IRS issue, they are you've unbanked yourself if you now have that issue going on, which is great for us. I love those types of deals. We got a lot of them going on right now. And say you have some equity in a property that you need to refi cash out to solve that issue, they can either get into a permanent loan and do a principal and interest payment, or they have to go hard money. So, you know, depending on your situation, if that's what you're in and you don't have many options, yeah, could I get you for 5 points and there's probably nothing they could do about it? Yeah, we easily could. Do I do that to everyone? No. Typically, on a permanent financing loan, again, depending on the fee, you know, if we can at least make 6 grand on the transaction, that's really what I'm looking to do. But again, it does also determine how quickly they want us to close and how many options they have. Rehab loans, typically we charge 2 points on rehab loans, but again, it depends on the loan amount. You know, if it's a really, really small loan amount, we may have to ask 3 points. Maybe 4 if it's just really small, but typically it's 2. You know, typically it's 2 points on a rehab loan. Ground up construction is always 2 points as well. So those are the general points, but again, always explain to people it depends really on the options we know you have on the in the marketplace. You know, it depends on how quickly we need to close, and it really depends on what your loan amount is because our points are based off the loan amount. So can I add a partner to my loan because they have better credit? Most lenders don't allow this. People will ask you that all the time. I see lenders getting a little bit more lax with it these days. When the market really started picking up, I would say in like 2013, I don't even think we have any recorded lender calls from them in the portal, but I would ask lenders this question a lot, and they would say no. They would say, if that person's not our borrower, you can't just add someone to the company that has nothing to do with this entity. Like, are they legally buying into the entity? Are they a real partner? Or are you just adding them for the credit? You know, if they're legally buying into the entity, yeah, we can go in and use their credit. But if you're just adding them, you know, for their credit, again, in 2013, a lot of lenders would tell me, no, you can't do that. I have seen a lot of lenders be lax, though, with that now. And, like, lending is such in its full swing now, that's probably why. It really depends on the lender to answer that question, to be honest with you. I would say some of our hard money lenders will allow that. Probably most of them at this point probably would, as long as there's a clear exit strategy on the loan, because, again, it's just a temporary financing loan. So if their plan is to refinance, how are they refinancing? You know, because that credit partner, that better credit partner, is still going to have to be on the loan, because they have the better credit, and you need higher credit to get a permanent financing loan. We do have some permanent financing lenders that will allow that after that credit partner has been on the title for a certain amount of time. But they are way I would say permanent financing lenders are, how do I word this? They don't welcome that as much as I would say hard money lenders do. It really just depends on the lender. You know, sometimes, you know, you just have to be weary when someone says that to you, because truly they are the real borrower, and the lender's not stupid. They're going to find that out. We're not stupid either, so we're going to figure it out as well. So if the person just has really bad credit, it's just, in general, it's very hard to get a loan done for someone when they have very bad credit, and we need to understand why. So it's not a total no, but, you know, it's probably going to be more acceptable in the hard money realm than the permanent financing realm. Next question, can I get bank rates and get cash out? Typically, no. You know, a lot of banks, we've done lender calls with a lot of banks, and I've asked them specifically, you know, hey, a lot of our borrowers have equity in their real estate and they want cash out to go purchase other properties. Are you guys, you know, is it something you guys do? And they've all, like, point blank just told me, no, we don't do what they call that walking money. We don't do that. I have had banks tell borrowers that, you know, they can do the cash out, and then they've changed their mind before, you know, right before closing, they're not going to do it. Also, I've had borrowers tell me they have gotten cash out from banks. So I guess it really just depends on your relationship that you have with your bank. I would just say, in general, from all the lenders that we've done calls with that are banks, typically they don't allow that. Now, we do work with lenders like BOFI and ReadyCap and not called B2R anymore. I forget what their name is. But that new lender that do offer some very, very competitive interest rates and do allow cash out. So I don't want to say it's a total no. I think it just depends what they want that cash out for. You know, if they want that cash out to go buy more properties, that's a very common use of cash out. If they're in some major problem with the IRS or the state or something, it's really just going to depend on lender to lender. But typically, no. When someone wants cash out, you know, you're really looking at those lenders in that bank alternate category, because they are fine with cash out. Like, no problem. Just write up a letter saying what you want to use it for. No one even verifies what the letter, no one verifies that. They just need it for their underwriting guidelines. Meaning, after the cash out is given them at closing, that lender's not going to call them and just verify that, hey, you said you wanted to buy this property. Did you actually buy it? No one's going to do that. I would assume if a bank ever gave you cash out, I would assume they would probably follow up to make sure that's what you did with it. But, again, it's going to be from lender to lender. But really just depends on what type of deal they have. In general, I know I'm repeating myself, but no. But for the larger loan amounts, like over $1 million, we do have some great lenders that I just mentioned that do have some very competitive interest rates and don't mind cash out. They will even work with borrowers that do have, you know, maybe you're not a 680 or you're only a 640 mid-FICO score. They will help you solve, you know, IRS issues, tax liens. They can get comfortable with that if you have a valid explanation for why these things are happening. So. Next question. I have great tax returns, great FICO, but I want to buy a vacant property. Can I get a bank loan? Typically, no. You know, if the banks want to see, not only does the borrower have great tax returns and FICO, but most banks want to see that property itself is also debt servicing because it's a commercial loan. Now, we do work with some really great lenders that offer great rental programs on the 1-4 unit investment properties, and they can get very competitive on the interest rate as long as the borrower's mid-FICO score is 660 or higher. So just sometimes people will assume if they have very great tax returns, very great FICO, they just think whatever property they're going to purchase, even if it's in shambles, they can get a bank loan on, and that's not the case. You know, if you yourself over here may be great, but if you're buying something that's totally dilapidated, doesn't debt service, isn't rented out at all, in general, banks don't want to deal with that. They're going to say, hey, get that fixed and stabilized. Once it's stabilized, producing income for whatever amount of time they want it to be producing income for, then come back and refinance to us. So just be aware of that. Some borrowers have this common misconception that just because, you know, they are awesome in terms of their tax returns and FICO, that they can buy anything and get bank rates on it. And I actually spend a lot of time sometimes explaining that to people that are in that situation. They themselves are very bankable, but the property they want to purchase is not. Can you get me an LOI tomorrow? We get that a lot as well. Yes, We can, typically, if the short form makes sense, but there are documents I'm going to need from you in order to get that lender to write that LOI up. You know, if it's a purchase, going to need a bank statement proving down money plus closing costs. You know, every deal is going to be a little different, but, you know, if it's a rehab deal, most lenders just, you know, really won't write up an LOI unless the borrower is already in a purchase and sales contract. And on the other side, there's that backside lash where a lot of borrowers will say to you, well, the realtor won't let me enter into a purchase and sales contract or make an offer until I show them I qualify for financing. You'll get that as well. And it's like this tango that we always play. If that's really the case and that's what the borrower says, I'll nudge the lender to get the LOI and we have done it. They will grumble. They don't want to waste their time because a lot of times we'll write up the LOI, we'll give it to the borrower, and then the borrower and the seller can't come to an agreement on the purchase and sales price and there's no deal and it blows up. And that person just wasted their time. So they get a little upset. So just, you know, keep that in mind. Most lenders will not issue an LOI if the borrower is not in a purchase and sales contract. I'm more than happy to talk to the realtor or any realtor on the transaction and explain to them why this person qualifies for financing or why they don't. And obviously, I would probably only talk to them if they do. That would make sense. But, yeah, we can get them an LOI tomorrow. Basic things I really need: a purchase and sales agreement if they have one. I need a bank statement proving closing costs and down money for the purchase. We do need proof of their FICO. You know, I need to know what FICO they have because we're going into this just trusting what they put on that short form as their FICO scores, but I can't tell you how many times I actually get their tri-merge credit report, and those scores are drastically different than from what they put on the short form. And that's just kind of really the main things. I mean, if it's a permanent financing loan, we're going to need a rent roll. We're going to need an income expense report. Just a couple other things, but it's not too much. It's really just some basic things I do need from them to get them an LOI. Another question you guys will get asked a lot, and you can see this on the bank loans and the bank alternate section of our product sheet. All of those programs typically come with some type of prepayment penalty. The only permanent financing lenders that I'm aware of that don't do prepayment penalties are banks and credit unions. And I've done a couple loans with banks and credit unions, only a couple of them, because it's most of our borrowers here are not, that's not what they need. So, yeah, banks and credit unions do have the ability to not offer a prepayment penalty on permanent financing loans. Our lenders don't, though. I mean, all the lender calls that we do, they all offer some type of prepayment penalty on those permanent rental loans, and it's because those lenders want to get those mortgage payments for that certain amount of time, you know, if they're going to extend you a loan for 30 years. They want to make sure at least you're going to be in it for a certain amount of time for it to be worth it for them. But, you know, people always complain about that. They gripe about it all the time. But if you plan to hold on to the property for more than 5 years, which usually most borrowers do, when I ask them, I'm like, do you plan to hold on to this property for more than 5 years? They're like, yeah. I'm like, so what's the big deal? The prepayment penalty ends after 5 years. We do have some lenders where you can buy down the prepayment penalty in terms of years, but it's going to cost you 1 point to take off 1 year. They're going to have to make the decision if that's worth it for them. But, yeah, all those programs come with prepayment penalties. We had an IEP speaking to a borrower last week about some of our permanent rental programs, and she asked her, you know, do these programs come with prepayment penalties? And she said yes. And the borrower got really uppity on the phone and went crazy and was like, well, that's against the law, and I'm going to report you to someone, start talking about her, that her husband was a judge. So she emailed me and Chris and went and explained to us how, you know, upset this woman got that she was talking to on the phone, a potential borrower. And she just wanted to let us know in case she contacted us, and I explained to the IEP, she doesn't understand that we do commercial loans here. Yes, for residential loans, maybe you can't charge a prepayment penalty. I don't know. I don't do residential loans. I've never done a residential loan. Someone on this phone call probably knows. But we do commercial loans here. I know it can be confusing to borrowers because 1 to 4 units are referred to as residential properties. Realtors refer to them that way. Everyone does. But we're doing them commercially, and our lenders do them commercially because they are investment properties. We always need a lease to prove that someone else is living in there, or if it's a rehab deal, we don't. But if it's a permanent loan, we'll need a lease to prove that someone's living in there. And they're always closing in some type of corporate entity. which it means this is a commercial loan. We don't do 1-4-unit loans here residentially. So unfortunately, the borrower she was talking to on the phone, potential borrower, was just uneducated. When she's talking about 1-4 units, she must be talking about a residential loan, and that's against whatever rules in residential lending. We don't do residential lending here. So it's another reason why I wanted to do this call this week, because that happened last week. So anyone that ever comes back to you with that, and you will get people that say, I can't believe there's prepayment penalties on these 1-4-unit investment properties. And the same thing. I've never heard of that. You have to say, ma'am, sir, we do these as commercial investment loans. We don't do any residential loans here. You know, maybe that's the case in residential lending, but we don't do residential lending here. If you're able to obtain a residential loan on this property, you probably want to go that way, because residential interest rates are always lower than commercial, just the nature of the business. You know, and again, if you can get a lower interest rate, that might make sense for you. And I would just say to them, you know, if we can ever help you in the future, let us know. Eventually, borrowers get tapped out on residential loans. You can only have so many residential loans. In commercial, there's no cap that I'm aware of. There is a cap sometimes from lender to lender on how many loans they'll extend to one borrower, but we'll just take them to a different lender. So no cap that I'm aware of in commercial. So eventually what happens to people is they have so many residential loans that they can't get any more residential loans. They have to switch to commercial, and they know that. This kind of went over questions pertaining to a residential mortgage. The only other thing I wanted to mention to you guys before we open up for questions is on the 1-4 units, just be very careful with the wording. That's why we ask on the short form, is this an owner-occupied property or an investment property? If someone is just kind of like giving you the feeling or wording things like they live in this 1-4 unit, that's a residential loan. They have to get a residential loan on it. None of our lenders will do a commercial loan on a 1-4 unit if the borrower lives there. Purely all those units have to be investment and rent it out to someone else, or if they're doing a fix and flip, just, you know, they just can't live there in any way, shape, or form. Be very careful when no one collects documents here but me, but just, you know, I have a rehab deal now where, you know, the property they are doing a loan on for a residential fix and flip, commercial loan, is the address on the borrower's license. That's his address. And as soon as I got a copy of his ID, I said to him, hey, sir, you know, we did go over this in the beginning, but why is your address the same as, we don't do residential loans here, you know, and he was clearly made aware, but people will just try to do whatever they're going to do. You know, so he has this spiel for me that he moved out and it's now an investment property and blah, 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 but it's already becoming problems in the loan, you know. So just kind of be careful. If they used to live in that property, that can also become a problem in terms of commercial loans, because, you know, sometimes borrowers will just try to get a commercial loan on a property because they don't qualify for a residential loan, and it's a big no-no with commercial lenders. There's definitely some law there. But just be careful about that. If someone is ever kind of using words that they live in the property, it's a 1-4 unit, or they used to, it's a red flag. Now, if they used to, you know, live there 10 years ago and they moved out, they now have another home, their driver's license has a different address, they have a lease on that other property, it's clearly running out to a tenant, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. But a lot of times people try to get over on that, and it's not going to work once it goes through underwriting. And at that point, they've already paid for an appraisal. I can't get that money back for them. So it just kind of is what it is. Last question, what documents are needed for my loan? Not going to harp on that too much. It's case by case. Things we always need, though, on every loan is, again, purchase and sales agreement. Purchase sales agreement, typically a personal financial statement or a 1003, copies of leases if it's rented out, rent rolls, income expense reports. If it's a rehab deal, we obviously need a rehab budget, some comps if they could get us some comps. So don't worry about that too much. Most of our loans here are low documentation, unless someone's trying to do a bank loan or a ground-up construction loan. I've never come into contact with a ground-up construction lender where they're low documentation. They're just heavy document loans. I would just let them know, you know, most of the deals we do here are not bank transactions, so I'm not going to need, like, your whole life and your firstborn and everything like that, just kind of the basic things on these. All right, that's basically it. I'm going to unmute everyone, and if anyone has any questions or if any borrowers are asking you guys things that you're not sure of, Let's go through them and we can get them answered for you. All right, guys, everyone is unmuted. So if anyone has any questions about the training or, again, anything anyone's asking you, just please let me know.
Hi, Megan. This is Grace. I had somebody ask me, is this the best you can do as far as rates and points? Is the answer yes, or is there a way that we can look at it or consider other options, or what's the answer there?
What type of deal was it?
I believe it was a rehab loan.
Do you remember the borrower's name?
Not off the top of my head.
So most of the, like, most of the time, I'm sorry, did you tell me it was a rehab loan?
I think it was. I'm not sure exactly, but I guess just in general, if somebody was to ask that question as well, it might have been Tammy, this lady Tammy, too, that I was working with. I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, so with Tammy, I remember I was just giving her, like, some general rates and terms because she has to figure out if she's trying to do a rehab loan or a wholesale transaction, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of broke that down for her, what the difference is, just so she's aware. So in general, like when we get a short form, we'll always try to get like one quote if there's a viable deal there. If you want to just run it by processing, if they're going to sign a fee agreement and they're going to use us, like we always get someone a quote if they have a real deal just as a courtesy, you know, and it's a lot of back and forth with lenders to sometimes establish those quotes, and every lender does it a little different. So it does take a little bit of effort to put it together, but we always do that as a courtesy. If they want us to obtain more quotes, I can certainly do that, but we need to sign a fee agreement with them knowing that they're going to use us, you know, just because it is very time-consuming to do that.
Okay.
So it really depends. You know, like if I offer someone a rehab deal and, you know, it's great to kind of go over it, like, depending on how many options they have, you know, like if it's in a bad area or a high crime area, if I am able to obtain a quote for them, that's going to be the best one, because if someone's in a high crime area, it's hard to get lenders to lend there, you know. But in general, our rehab lenders always charge 2 points. We charge 2 points. Probably the highest I can get them is 85 to 90% of the purchase price, depending on their experience. It's typically more like 80 to 85 with most lenders. But we do have a rehab lender that allows an upfront draw as well. And I really like working with them. They are number 23 on our product sheet. But they are looking for very experienced rehab borrowers. But, yeah, if you want to just run it by, you know, processing or even me, like, if I can get them something better, I'll let you know. Like, I'll say, hey, yeah, I probably can. I just need to know that they're going to use us. But typically, we always try to get them. We always do try to go to the lender right off the top that we know is going to be the best fit. It really just depends on the file, so sorry to be really vague about that.
No, it's fine. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Megan, this is Phil.
Hey, Phil.
I got a quick question for you in reference to the ARV. It doesn't even matter if it's rehab or new construction. But let's just say someone buys something for $500,000, puts $100,000 into it at 600 hard costs, and he says it's worth $1 million. How do they calculate the ARV based on a developer or an investor presenting the numbers together when we submit a package?
Like, how does the appraiser determine?
Yeah, well, how do they figure the ARV based on what the developer or the borrower is putting in there? Because that's a $400,000 jump right there. And I'm just wondering if that's realistic when they look at it.
So the appraiser is always going to determine the ARV, the after repair value. And the way they're typically going to do that was with comps, you know? So there's going to have to be comps of a similar property type in the area. Really, that's how they do it.
Okay.
You know, there's recent, hopefully within the past 6 months, there's some recent sold properties of like properties. But there's three different ways that appraisers appraise things. There's like a cost approach, an income approach, And then I guess the last one's a comparable approach. I should know because I look at so many appraisals.
Right, right.
I know there are different ways to comp things out that appraisers do, but I can tell you most of the time it's typically just done by comps. Like if the comps don't support that ARV, you know, it really, they're not going to get that ARV.
Right. Well, I would assume that in some cases the ARV by the borrower or co-developer or whatever they are, they might be overstating the ARV, and that obviously impacts the number on the whole package. So I'm just wondering if you've run into that.
All the time.
Okay, that's what I figured. Okay, that's what I thought. I just, that's what I thought.
Yeah, everyone overinflates that ARV, you know, and it's just something that you will experience in every single file. I don't know if it's the realtor they're dealing with in the transaction that's like, hey, this is a good deal, you know,
right.
Get this, and they are all gung-ho that this AR, it's going to appraise here.
Right.
I can, there's not too many borrowers that are ever happy when an appraisal comes back. It's just an
agent. Yeah, that's okay. That's the realistic approach. Okay, that's what
it
I
is.
Need.
What I can tell you one thing, though, is that a lot of our lenders, a lot of them, almost all of them actually, like when we get our short forms together, especially like a rehab short form, they actually have programs where they can search comps and stuff themselves. And if they don't feel it's going to appraise there, they'll tell us. Like they'll tell us, you know, like, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing the comps here. You know, can you, like, we'll order the appraisal. Please let the borrower know, like, we're not seeing any comps here. So we always do give the borrower a heads up so they're not upset when it doesn't appraise. They're always told,
right.
So you know. If the borrower is just like, I don't want to say defiant, that's not the right word, but if the borrower is gung-ho that, hey, yes, you've told me, but I still want to move forward, you know, they were warned, that's on them.
Okay. That's what I thought, but I wanted to hear it from you.
Hey, Ryan.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, Phil, what I would say, too, is that you can always let borrowers know that ultimately the appraisal is going to be what mandates and dictates what the ultimate loan amount is, and that's going to be what the ARV is. And if somebody's claiming that they're an experienced rehabber, then they should know their market. And if they give you something that's inaccurate, that's on them, you know, especially if you've told them, like, hey, you know, ultimately it's going to be based on the appraisal.
Right. Well, I was just trying to prepare myself for the problem that would exist if all of a sudden it's off by a couple hundred thousand. That obviously affects, you know, the numbers that can be dispersed and worked on, and it affects the whole calculation. So,
yeah, it does. It doesn't always kill the deal, just so you know. Like, most of the time when the appraisal comes back lower, it doesn't kill the deal. It's just the borrower is going to have to put more money into it, and that's why I always ask your bank statement, because in my head, I'm game planning that when this starts going, you know, down the wrong path, you know, does this person still really have the money to get the deal done if it doesn't comp out, you know?
Right. Yep.
So that's why I always do that. It's really just to not waste our
time.
Okay. Once in a while, we do actually have properties that overappraise. It's much more rare than properties that underappraise. But once in a while, we do have properties that overappraise, and when that happens, the borrower just loves you. They will, like, oh my God, thank you so much. And I'm always like, you're welcome. But in my head, I'm like, I'm not the appraiser. I had nothing to do with this, but I'm just going to take it anyway. Like, oh, you're welcome, you know.
Well, I'm not going to assume that.
Did you have any other questions, though?
Yes, Meg.
No, that was good for me.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Do we have any lenders that do desktop appraisals for fix and flip, single family?
We do. We do have a couple lenders that do desktop appraisals. That would be like your Lending Homes, although their process is getting a little bit more rigid. On a refinance, they won't do a desktop. They have to do a full appraisal. We did a call with Fund That Flip a little bit ago, and on most of their deals, they don't do an appraisal, they state. So I would say there are some lenders out there that don't do a full-blown appraisal and will do desktop appraisals, but in general, most lenders don't work like that. Most lenders do want a full appraisal.
Okay, and do we have...
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Sorry. Do we have any lenders that in our pocket for as long as the appraisal comes back and the lender has all the expenses, the purchase price, and also the rehab under 70% LTV, that they'll do 100% financing?
Yeah. I mean, there are, okay. there are definitely lenders that we've interviewed and done calls with, and there's some of those programs, just so you know, are on our product sheet.
Okay.
We have, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you repeat that question again? This is Teresa. I didn't quite understand what he was saying.
Anthony, you want to go ahead again?
Oh, yes.
Sorry, Anthony.
For that, you know, no problem. For that question, I was saying about, obviously, I'm an experienced investor as well, so it's good to be on this side of the fence as well. So I know that some lenders, as long as the purchase price and also the rehab is under 70%. So that's saying if the property is
under 70% of the ARV.
It's the ARV is what he's trying to say, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, got it.
So the ARV or the loan to the value of the property,
Yeah, okay. it's usually like if those expenses are under 70% of the ARV, we do have lenders that will do 100%. And Program 24 is one on our product sheet that will do 100%. Program 23 is really darn close to 100%, but you do have to prove some heavy reserves with that lender.
Okay.
There's another program we have on here that's 100%.
I was looking one for ground up.
Yeah, we don't typically have a 100% ground up construction lender just because, you know, there's just so much that goes –
Right.
There is that one lender we did interview. They do say just ground up just takes so much more money. Whenever a lender advertises they do 100% ground up, there's some type of catch to that, you know. Even when lenders advertise they do 100% and fix and flip financing, there's still some type of catch to that. And the catch is, you know, with Ricasa, they're one lender we work with that does 100%. They cross collateralize your personal home. Yeah, we'll give you 100% financing. We can cross-collateralize your personal home. There's always some type of catch to that, you know?
Yep.
Or, yes, you must have completed 12 fix and flips in the past 12 months and prove it with HUD-1s, and you must have 700-plus FICO, and the deal must make sense. So, yes, we do work with lenders that do offer almost 100% financing. We did a lender called Aloha Capital fund that flip also, and we did write-ups on their programs as well, but I would say in general, there's typically always some type of catch to the 100% financing.
Yeah, and you know what? Most of the times, the big catch is that we'll weed out most of these people is that those lenders, though they may not require you to put the money down, they want you to have the money in your bank account. You still need 15 or 20% reserves that you can show on a bank statement. And the main reason why so many people are looking for 100% financing is for the same reason that we got so much response on this last lender blast that said they would accept a second lien position is because there's a ton of people that don't have any money that want to have to do – they want to try to do a real estate deal, and they don't have any money, you know. And so they aren't going to qualify for the 100% because they still need money in a bank account even if the lender doesn't make them put it into the deal.
Definitely. And not to mention this, you know, slim pickings for 70% out there in the field.
Yeah.
Every deal is going to be based on its own merits, and that's the big thing about commercial lending that people really don't understand. That's something I should have put in this call. You know, not everyone in the world is going to need a commercial loan. There's a lot more people in the world that are going to need a residential loan because most people end up buying a house, and they're going to need a commercial loan. Not everyone invests in investment properties. So people in general, I feel, kind of understand residential lending. You know, it's pretty simple. Every house has some bedrooms, some bathrooms, a living room, a dining room, a kitchen. Like, they're all different sizes, but they all have the same thing, you know? Residential homes don't produce income. They don't make money. That's not what the lender's looking at when they qualify you for a residential loan. They're just looking at how much money do you personally make and what's your FICO, you know? And I don't even know if the territory matters because I don't think you can discriminate in terms of a residential loan on if it's in a high-crime area. Commercial lending is like the polar opposite of residential lending. it's not just based on the borrower and their financials, but every property produces a different amount of income or has the potential to produce a different amount of income if it's a construction loan. And residential or commercial lenders are very picky about territory. They want high population areas, low crime areas, you know, so it's just, they're just two totally different worlds. And a lot of times people just don't understand what commercial lenders are looking for when they qualify you. So, did anyone else have any other questions about the training call today or anything borrowers are asking you that you're not sure how to answer?
And Megan, this is Teresa one more time. I just want to close the loop on that conversation that you had about the unruly person I spoke to. And
yeah,
I just want to say, yeah, I just want to say I ended the whole conversation with thank you, but I don't think we have anything that will suit your needs, and I hung up. I didn't let her continue to badger me and tell me I was lying to her. And as soon as someone started doing that, instead of getting angry or fighting back, the answer is just say, I'm sorry, I don't have anything for you, and just hang up very politely. As angry as you want to be and upset, you just have to hang up. And so I just want to share that with people. That's how it ended.
Exactly. I mean, you really, really do. You know, like being a – and I'm so glad you handled it like that. Like, you know, being a professional in this business, like you're a professional in this business, you know. Like you have to think to yourself – and, again, a lot of people think since there's a lot of bad brokers in this business that they can just – push brokers around and deal with them when they want and ignore you and then get your attention when you can't. Like, no, any real professional is going to respect their time, you know? And
right.
She clearly didn't understand the difference between residential and commercial lending. I've had borrowers do the same thing to me, and I just tell them, you know, ma'am, sir, I'm sorry. Yeah, same thing. We just don't have anything that can assist you for what you're looking for here. You know, you need to go contact another brokerage company or another lender, and hopefully they can help you.
And hang up before you allow them to continue, and that's the end
exactly.
of it.
Exactly. I would never stay on the phone with someone that is just literally blatantly screaming at you. I just wouldn't do that. I have in the past, and I learned really quickly that there's nothing I can do to help this person. They're mad at the world, you know.
Yep.
I feel
yep.
bad for them that unfortunately their life is that horrible, you know. But
yep.
if they're that belligerent from the get-go, you'll never get them to a close. Just believe mm-hmm. me. Like, you'll never get them to a close. They'll fight you the whole entire way. They'll just make your life miserable. They won't get you the docs you need. It will just be a one colossal, huge train of a waste of time. So, and by the way, just so you know, her husband never called me or Chris.
Okay.
Her husband that was the judge?
Yeah.
He never called us.
Okay. Well, that's good.
No, we wanted him to call us. I was like, give him our direct phone number. But yeah, if someone's just really bullying you guys, you know, just, you know, remove yourself from that phone call. We'll never get that person to a close. And unfortunately, that woman just didn't understand. You know, I've had people do that to me, and I've just told them, like, you know, we do commercial loans here. You know, there's a difference between commercial and residential loans. And if you want to learn more about it, hey, we have a training program, you know.
Okay. Thank you for handling that.
Guys, does anyone else have any other questions about, you know, maybe things that you're not sure how to answer? Okay. All right. Well, this call was recorded, everyone. I'm going to, you know, send this out to everyone just so everyone has it. And then what I'm going to try to do is I'm really going to try to get that PowerPoint done this week, and I know I've been promising everyone that for a while. Always just the Prodigy is a great keep safe. If someone is asking rates and terms, which is what you're going to keep getting asked, please keep that like your holy Bible. Also, the weekly marketing materials we send out, you guys should create a folder for them, like whatever you want to call it, email, marketing materials. Create a folder for lender calls. Create a folder for training calls. And when I send them out, just file those things in there so you have access to those things. I know Anthony does update the calls in the portal. He's supposed to do that every Friday, but I think he's a little behind. But, again, everyone, thank you so much for being on the call. And I will send this out to everyone. If anyone has any questions, just let me know. Have a great day, guys.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye.